This podcast was produced by ORFM Dunedin with support from New Zealand On the Air.
It's time for Muslim Chaplaincy Conversation at ORFM Dunedin.
Bismillahirrahmanirrahim. In the name of God, most gracious, most merciful. Assalamu alaikum, which means peace be with you in Arabic. My name is Arina Aizal, and I'll be your host for the Muslim Chaplaincy Conversation today. In today's episode, we have an interview with Sister Sophia Wong, a Singaporean and final year undergraduate student at the Dental School, University of Otago. As usual, we begin with a recitation of the Quran by Sheikh Mishari Al-Fash, Surah 21, Al-Anbiya, the Prophets, verses 30 to 35.
أَوَلَمْ يَرَ الَّذِينَ كَفَرُوا أَنَّ السَّمَاوَاتِ وَالْأَرْضَ كَانَتَا رَتْقًا فَفَتَقْنَاهُمَا وَجَعَلْنَا مِنَ الْمَاءِ كُلَّ شَيْءٍ حَيٍّ أَفَلَا يُؤْمِنُونَ وَجَعَلْنَا فِي الْأَرْضِ رَوَاسِيَ أَنْ تَمِيدَ بِهِمْ وَجَعَلْنَا فِيهَا فِجَاجًا سُبُلًا لَعَلَّهُمْ يَهْتَدُونَ وَجَعَلْنَا السَّمَاءَ سَقْفًا مَحْفُوظًا وَهُمْ عَنْ آيَاتِهَا مُعْرِضُونَ وَهُوَ الَّذِي خَلَقَ اللَّيْلَ وَالنَّهَارَ وَالشَّمْسَ وَالْقَمَرَ كُلٌّ فِي فَلَكٍ يَسْبَحُونَ وَمَا جَعَلْنَا لِبَشَرٍ مِّن قَبْلِكَ الْخُلْدَ أَفَإِن مِتَّ فَهُمُ الْخَالِدُونَ كُلُّ نَفْسٍ ذَائِقَةُ الْمَوْتِ وَنَبْلُوكُمْ بِالشَّرِّ وَالْخَيْرِ فِتْنَةً وَإِلَيْنَا تُرْجَعُونَ
Translation of the recited verses. In the name of God, most gracious, most merciful. Are the disbelievers not aware that the heavens and the earth used to be joined together, and that we ripped them apart, that we made every living thing from water? Will they not believe? And we put firm mountains on earth, lest it should sway under them, and set broad paths on it, so that they might follow the right direction. And we made the sky a well-secured canopy, yet from its wonders they turn away. It is He who created night and day, the sun and the moon, each floating in its orbit. We have not granted everlasting life to any other human being before you either, Muhammad. If you die, will the disbelievers live forever? Every soul is certain to taste death. We test you all through the bad and the good, and to us you will all return. We will now have our interview with Sister Sophia.
Assalamu alaikum, Sister Sophia.
Wa alaikum salam. Thanks for having me.
Thank you for being here today on Muslim Chaplaincy Conversation. Do you mind introducing yourself to our listeners before we start?
Oh yeah, for sure. Hi, I'm Sophia. I'm from Singapore. I came to New Zealand for university in 2023.
Yeah. And what do you currently do?
I'm currently studying dentistry, and I'm in my final year of dentistry now. Mm. Yeah.
So this must be an exciting year for you, being your last one. How many years have you been in New Zealand?
I've been in New Zealand. This is my fourth year in New Zealand. And so it's a the second to fifth year of dentistry. So I did health science first year online in Singapore. Yeah, and then because it was COVID, I couldn't come here yet. Yeah, so I only came to New Zealand to start my second year of dentistry. Yeah, so I've been here 4 years. This is my fourth year here. Every year has been very different, which is really interesting.
I feel like we'll talk about doing health tech first year online and what that's like later in the interview.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
But you're from Singapore, so I wonder if you can tell us about growing up in Singapore. Can you tell us about your family?
Okay. So I'm half Malay, half Chinese. My mom is Singaporean Malay. My dad is Chinese Malaysian. So my mom grew up in Singapore. My dad moved to Singapore when he was 15, when he got a scholarship to study in Singapore. And he's been in Singapore ever since. Yeah, and then my parents met in university. And yeah.
And so you're half Chinese and half Malay from your parents.
Yeah.
And your dad's a revert?
Yeah, my dad's a revert. So he kind of got, he was exposed to Islam in Malaysia, but I think he only started to actually get to know about Islam and like what it's about and everything through my mom. And then yeah, once he like learned a bit more about it, he sort of decided that, you know, Islam sounds like the right religion, so he repeated it. Yeah.
How did they meet?
They met in university. Yeah. They're both studying dentistry, so they're in the same class for a couple of years. Yeah.
So both of your parents are dentists.
Yeah.
And you're studying dentistry.
Yeah.
So what was it like growing up in a multicultural household?
It was actually, it wasn't really obvious that it was a very multicultural household. I think because my dad is from Malaysia, he also speaks Malay and my mom speaks Malay, but mostly we spoke English at home. And I think in Singapore as well, most of the classes are conducted in English. So even with my friends and everything, most of the time we spoke English. Yeah.
And Singapore itself is a very multicultural country.
Yeah. It's quite diverse. So the ethnic distribution is sort of like 70% Chinese, 15% Malays, 10% Indians, and the rest are like the others category, which are like the other races that are in Singapore. Yeah, so even though it's a majority Chinese country, there's still exposure to Malays and like in schools and everything. So it's not like, so I guess encountering like a Malay Muslim isn't like a like thing that they're not used to. And so because there's quite a significant portions of Singaporeans that are like, I guess being Malay is quite tied to being Muslim. So because there's quite a significant portion of like Malay Muslims in Singapore, like things like halal food and mosques and stuff are quite accessible. So that was, it's pretty convenient.
And, you know, being half Chinese and like Muslim, how does that shape your identity growing up, especially going to school there?
I think most of the time it's not that obvious, but of course there are situations where I sort of felt like I was neither here nor there. Like sometimes I'll feel like I'm too Chinese to be amongst the Malays. And then with my Chinese friends, of course, I'm like the Malay Muslim friend that they have. But I think besides that, like in class, once you're friends with people, they don't really notice that anymore. Yeah. I think because Singapore is quite a secular country as well, they try to tone down like the emphasis on religion and stuff like that. So like the differences aren't as obvious, I guess. Yeah.
And I heard a lot about Singapore being like the interfaith harmony there. Can you tell us about the different religions that exist there?
Yeah, so I think the different religions would be like Christianity, Buddhism, Taoism, Hinduism, like Islam and stuff like that. And Singapore has like Racial Harmony Day, where like we sort of learn about the different cultures and like appreciate the different cultures. And I think part of the education system as well, they also do like learning journeys to the different places of worship for the different religions. So we have like learning journeys to like the churches and like stuff like that, and the temples and stuff like that, just to learn a bit more about their religion as well, so that there's like this understanding and acceptance even as students with each other.
I love how there's a day for it.
Yeah.
Let's talk about school in Singapore. I'm from Malaysia, so this is something really interesting. I just want to hear more about how different it is to go to school there. But what was your school experience like? Does it start at 7 years old?
Oh, yeah. Mm. So there's like primary school and then secondary school. Primary school goes from when you're 7 years old to 12 years old. So it's 6 years. And then you go to secondary school and that's 4 years. And then after secondary school and after each like big like section of school, there's like a national exam. So at the end of primary school, you have like the primary school leaving examination, and then how you do for that examination sort of determines what secondary school you can go to. And then at the end of secondary school, you have the GCE O-level examinations. And then the options after that are to either go to junior college, which is 2 years, or to go to like a polytechnic, which is normally around 3 years. Yeah.
And with the national schools, Do you have other types of schools in Singapore?
So there's like the government schools, and then I guess there are also like madrasas and stuff like that. So I think the big difference is that in the madrasas, they incorporate both the formal education and Islamic education all in one in the madrasas. And the madrasas also allow you to wear the hijab as part of the uniform, which is not something you can do if you go to a government school in Singapore.
Mm. Yeah. And did you go to a government school?
Yeah.
Mm. What's your experience like there?
The focus would mostly be on academics and stuff like that. And I think the Singapore academic system is quite vigorous. Like, there's a lot of pressure there. So, yeah.
So you were really focused on your academics. Yeah, what types of subjects?
So in primary school, it would be like English, math, science, mother tongue. So mother tongue is the only language that we have that isn't done in English. And so it's a compulsory subject that for you to learn your language, I guess. Yeah. And then when you go to secondary school, there's like other subjects such as geography, history, literature, and the sciences would split into like physics, bio, chemistry. And I think at some point you sort of choose which subjects you want to take. Yeah.
What were you interested in when you were at school?
So I went through the system because I did really well for like my primary school leaving examination. I got into one of the schools that's like, it's part of this program called an integrated program. So normally you have to do the 4 years of secondary school and then you sit for the O-level and then get into a junior college. But then I got into a school in this program. So it's basically, it has a junior college that's already affiliated with that. And so it's a straight 6 year track. Yeah. So I did the sciences, and I think the humanities said it was history.
Mm.
Yeah. And then I didn't have to, I got to skip the national exam, which I was really glad about.
Oh.
Yeah. And then I got into, and so I went to junior college and I did bio, chem, math, and economics. Yeah.
Is it abnormal to skip the national exams?
I think it's limited to a certain number of schools that you can go through that program because you have to get a certain grade to get into those schools. So it's harder to get in, but once you get into those schools, you sort of are offered that program. Yeah. So I think it's, how many schools offer that? Maybe about 7 secondary schools, and then it goes into about 3 to 4 junior colleges. Yeah.
Mm. Were there any religious classes in school for you or like outside of school that you attend to?
Yeah, so school didn't offer religious classes for me. So my religious classes were mostly on the weekends. So Sunday was sort of like our day to go for madrasa. And so from primary school to secondary school, there was a fixed curriculum that we went through on top of the Quran classes. So in primary school, there was like Tawhid, Fiqh, Akhlaq, Sirah. And that went on till I was sort of finishing secondary school. And then after that, I just continued with like my Quran classes.
Oh, yeah. So you've been going there since, you know, primary school.
Yeah, yeah. Mm.
Was it separated by different age groups?
Yeah, mostly. I think it was mostly by age group. But each class, I think the age range would be like 1 to 3 years apart within the class. Yeah, it's sort of when you decide to start, I guess.
Was it organized by the mosque?
Mine wasn't part of a mosque, but I think the educational institute is sort of associated with another Muslim sort of
body.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
And with your, you know, Quran studies and all, so you learned there. Were there other options that you got to learn religious studies in Singapore?
I think that was mostly my religious classes. But even the Quran classes, it was split into like learning the basics and then slowly like improving from there based on our age. And I think every year they would sort of do an assessment at the start of the year to see like where we were. And then based on that, they would separate us into like the different classes that to help like work on what we needed to work on. Yeah.
What about at home?
At home, it would mostly be like reading the Quran with my family mostly. Yeah.
Mm. And how many siblings do you have?
I have 3 siblings. Yeah.
Can you tell me about them?
So I have an older sister and 2 younger brothers. My sister is working as a cardiac technician And my two younger brothers, one of them is studying economics in university and the other one is currently in his national service.
Mm. Yeah. Can you tell me a bit about the national service in Singapore?
Yeah, so the national service is compulsory for the young men after they complete like their pre-university education. So depending on which path you go to, the starting age is sort of different. So if you go through the junior college path, you enter national service the year after you finish junior college. So that's about when you're 18 years old. Whereas if they go through like the polytechnic path, they would start at 19 years old instead. And it goes on for about a year and 10 months. Yeah. And in national service, they sort of split you into like the army, the civil defense, or the police force. Yeah.
Can you tell us where your brother is?
Oh, yeah. So my youngest brother now, he's in the police force. My other brother was in the civil defense.
And that's random.
Yeah, they sort of allocate it to you.
Thinking about childhood memories, do you have any strong memories from, you know, growing up in Singapore?
I feel like my strongest memories were more of during the holidays, because I think during the year, like especially with school, it would be quite focused on academics and stuff like that. So I think my memories would be during the break. My parents, especially, they love to travel, so we always go overseas, and that would be like our nice our nice break out of Singapore, because Singapore's quite small, and so like anywhere that you go that's out of Singapore is exciting to us.
Yeah. Sure. What places have you been growing up?
It's quite a range of places. I think the experiences are also quite different. Like some trips are more like shopping trips, some are more like sightseeing trips. So some places are like Korea, Thailand. I think we've been to Vietnam. We've been to New Zealand and Australia quite a bit. Yeah. And we've been to Switzerland as well, and probably a few more countries. Yeah.
Yeah. So you have been to New Zealand before you came here to study.
My parents actually really, my dad especially, he really loves New Zealand. Yeah.
Is that why he chose to send you here?
That was part of the influence.
So he can come visit.
Yeah. I mean, he was happy with that I'm studying here. He was saying like he wants to try and come as much as possible while I'm still here.
Yeah.
Because it makes sense for him to come here.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's good on him then.
Yeah.
Do you remember much about your previous trips to New Zealand when you were small?
Yeah. It was a good mix of like North Island and South Island and quite a bit of sightseeing, road trips mostly. And I think some of the random memories were also like within the accommodations. Like there was this one place that had only one like movie disc. And so like at night when we had nothing to do, we would replay that movie every single night.
Do you remember the movie?
I think it was Lion King. So we watched Lion King for like 4 or 5 nights in a row.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then I think there's another time my dad went fishing with my brother and it was like getting late and we were just not hearing from him. We were like, what's going on? And then finally we got to contact him and we found out that his car sort of got stuck in like the mud or something.
Oh.
And
he
got, yeah. And so we were like panicking, trying to figure out what to do. I'm not sure what happened, but he got home safe that night.
I love how that's like your core memory about New Zealand trips.
Yeah.
Mm. Now let's talk about your studies. So after high school, can you talk? Oh, and then you went to junior college. Can you tell me what it was like choosing Otago to do your first year health science?
Yeah, so I sort of wanted to, like, of course, I was deciding where to go for university. And initially, I did apply in Singapore, but I didn't get in. And so I was sort of considering my other options. And I guess the main countries that I was considering were like on the list of countries would be like US, UK, Australia, New Zealand. But I think for me, safety was like quite a big thing that I was factoring in. So I sort of narrowed it down to New Zealand and Australia. And I've heard of a lot of people who went to Australia. And I was like, let me look a little bit more into the other country that I don't really hear people talk about as much. Yeah. And because I wanted to do dentistry. So Otago is the only university in New Zealand that does dentistry, that offers dentistry. Yeah. So I kind of looked a bit more into the university. And I think I know of a few people, like a few dentists in Singapore who graduated from Otago as well. So it has like a good reputation. Yeah, and when I looked up Otago, like I saw the campus was like beautiful and like all the statistics and I was like, it looks like a good option to go to. And I think it also like, in my head, it was also an opportunity to travel around the country while I'm studying, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah. And I know that New Zealand's like a really beautiful country. So I was excited for that part on top of just like coming for university.
Yeah. And it's like plus points. The dental school in Otago is also really good. Yeah. And so you did your health sci first year online.
Yeah.
What was that like?
It was actually not bad. I think coming here, like talking about it with my friends, I think I had it better than them. Yeah, because they sort of had to come up with a curriculum for us last minute. It actually wasn't a plan for me to do it online. I was supposed to take another gap year because the borders were not open yet. And so I was initially meant to start health science in 2023. But then I think in like late November, December of 2021, they sent an email being like, we're possibly coming up with an online program for health science this year. Would you be interested in doing that? And I was like, yes, I would love to. Because I just wanted to like move on with my life, you know. I just wanted to start uni.
What were you doing while you wait?
So I had to take a gap year because, you know, I couldn't start university yet. So during that year, I worked as a dental assistant. Yeah. And that sort of also gave me exposure into like the dental side. And yeah, there's like quite a lot that I took away from that actually. Like on top of just knowing that I wanted to, like, and like being the DA, I sort of saw the dentist doing like the procedures and whatever. And I remember thinking like, I want to be the one doing that because I'm the sort of person that really enjoys doing stuff with my hands. And like the stuff that they were doing at the time, of course, I didn't really understand what they were doing, but it just looked really interesting. And like and it's interesting, but also like it has a purpose and it brings like benefit to someone's, you know, life and like oral health and stuff like that.
And I'm glad you had that experience before you chose to study as well.
Yeah, yeah. And on top of that, I think I also saw the relationship that the dentist sort of had with her patients. And like a lot of her patients were like patients that she's been seeing for like 20 years that they bring in like their family, their relatives and stuff like that. And they sort of built this like friendship of sorts that every time they come, it's also like a session to like catch up on their family and stuff like that. And I thought that was really wholesome as well.
Aww.
Yeah.
And so with the experience of working as a dental assistant and then starting HealthSci first year online, what were the classes like that you have to, you know, look at the computer the whole day? What was the arrangement?
So it was, I mean, the lectures would be the same, but they're just recorded and we could watch it in our own time. And then the labs would be like over Zoom. So it'll be around like 3 lectures a day and we'd have labs about 4 times a week. Yeah, so it was mostly staring at the computer. And so I sort of scheduled my day that I got to take breaks in between. So like I'll do like 1 or 2 lectures in the morning, take a lunch break, and then like continue with the labs. And then if I had one more lecture, to do that after that. Yeah.
Was it a good experience being able to do it from home?
I actually quite enjoyed it because like at least I'm with my family still. I still get to like disturb my siblings when I wanted a break from school. Yeah. And the lectures being recorded would be easy to like replay and yeah. And the labs weren't as long as the labs here, I think, because I think some parts of it are hard to bring online. So like for instance, the Hubs labs were mostly the anatomy portion was mostly like showing the bones in the camera and like pointing out the different parts. And the physiology component was more of like slideshows and for us to ask questions and stuff like that.
Mm.
Yeah. Most of the labs were about 1 hour. I think there was one paper, it was either cells or bioc, that it was a bit longer. And so what they did was that they recorded the experiment in a video and then they would upload it on, what was it, Blackboard? Yeah. And then so during the Zoom call, we had to watch the video and like fill up the worksheet that they gave, I guess. So they have the video, they have like the quantities, but then we'll be doing like the math and like answering the questions, and then they'll go through that at the end of the lab. Yeah.
Yeah. Because I did a few of the health side first year papers.
Oh,
so
okay.
I can imagine what you're talking about before I switched to an arts degree. Was there a time zone difference?
It was actually really great for me. It was like the timing was really good. So the labs for me were mostly around like 12 to 1 p.m. But I think I just was on the lucky end of it because the this online thing was also for the international students from other countries. And I think the students from like Kuwait had to wake up at like 4 a.m. for their labs.
Wow.
So it was really luck of the draw.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so when did you come to Dunedin? When did the borders open for you then?
So I think the borders actually opened halfway through health science first year. But I sort of decided, you know, I kind of got into this rhythm of doing it online. I'll just finish health science first year online. Yeah, so I finished health science first year. And then I think late November, I got my offer for dentistry. Yeah, and then so that was when I started planning, like, move to New Zealand, prepare my visa and everything. And then I moved in mid-February of 2023. Yeah.
And what was it like? Was there any like COVID process that needed to happen? Or because I don't really remember that time anymore.
I think by then it was all right already. Like there wasn't really any extra steps that I had to take. It was more like the normal process of like international students going to New Zealand. Yeah.
So what was it like being in Dunedin?
Oh, that was great. It's very different from Singapore because Singapore's very city and Dunedin's very like quiet and yeah. And I think one of the things that surprised me was how international Dunedin actually is, because I think coming here, I wasn't really like I sort of knew that it would be international, but I thought that it would still be like a significant number of like Kiwis and stuff like that I would see here. But it was really like international. I was like, oh, that's cool. Mm. Yeah.
And especially in dental school as well.
Yeah, for sure. But yeah, coming, I think I was lucky because my parents came with me. And so like with the bags and stuff, it was a bit easier. Yeah. And I still remember it was right when I was coming. It was when there was that cyclone in Auckland. And we had our layover in Auckland. And so our plane from Auckland to Dunedin got cancelled. But then I had to like move into my hall and everything. So we were like sort of thinking like, what do we do? Like how do we move, you know? So they sort of managed to arrange a flight for us to Queenstown. And then we took the intercity bus from Queenstown down to Dunedin. And so it was like a whole day of traveling.
a whole adventure as well.
And we reached Dunedin at almost 10 p.m. And we were staying like sort of near the Octagon, but then we didn't realize that the walk from the bus stop to our accommodation was over a kilometer long, and we each had like two big bags with us. That like my dad was like, you know what, I'll borrow a countdown trolley and like push our luggages and return the trolley after that.
So you put everything in the trolley.
Yeah. So that was quite an experience. Yeah.
Oh, it's good to know that's how you came and settled in, and it sounds like a really wonderful memory of you and your parents as well. Did you settle in well with Dunedin's weather and also, you know, just the cultural differences here?
I think one of the things that like threw me off the most was that the summer here, the day is really long. And I still remember there was one day it was like 8 p.m. and I thought it was 3 p.m. And then I checked the time and I was like, oh, like it's dinner time, but it looks like it's lunchtime outside, you know?
Mm.
Yeah. Besides that, I think because I was studying dentistry straight, so it was easier for me to make friends in that sense. Yeah. So making friends wasn't as much as a struggle that I think it would have been if I was doing health science. Yeah.
Did you meet a lot of Singaporeans and Malaysians?
Eventually, yeah, at like through the like OMSA and stuff like that. Yeah, but in dental school, there were actually a few Singaporeans that also did health science. But then because I was just doing my own thing, I never really like met up with them or anything. So on the first day of orientation, like two of them actually came up to me and were like, are you from Singapore? I was like, oh, yeah. Are you guys Singaporeans as well? Yeah. So those were like my first friends, thankfully, that I made in dental school. Yeah.
Hmm. And with it being your final year in dentistry, how has it been going? Is the degree exactly what you thought it would be?
Yes and no. Yeah. Of course, there are some parts that are challenging and some parts I really enjoy. But I think final year, like each year is sort of really different. So the way I sort of think of it is that second year was still very academic focused. Of course, there was also like simulation lab, but I sort of remember it as mostly being like academic focus. And then third year, whatever we learned in simulation lab in second year, we start doing it in clinic. And so third year, I think because they were trying to get us used to like the groove of like clinics and seeing patients and stuff, so they sort of cut down on the academic part quite a bit. So the focus was mostly on clinics. Yeah. And then fourth year was a good mix of like academics and clinics. And final year is mostly clinics, which is one day of like a few lectures and workshops. Yeah. So every year has been quite different. And like, even now, I'm still learning every day from going to clinic and stuff, which is really nice.
Mm.
And I'm really enjoying the clinic aspect of it. And so I'm really
like
enjoying
the practical
things. Yeah, yeah. I think, yeah, I'm the sort of person that even though clinics can get quite challenging, as long as I know I'm learning, I still like appreciate that difficult, like, that struggle that I'm going through.
Mm. Yeah. And what are you planning to do after graduating?
I'm not entirely sure yet. I'm considering maybe working in New Zealand for a bit. Yeah, but I think eventually the plan is to go back home. Yeah.
Mm. And with your parents being dentists, I'm sure they have a path for you.
Yeah. Yeah, so like my mom, she sort of wants me to take over her clinic. And I mean, she's ready to retire. I think the thing that's stopping her from retiring is that her patients want to see her.
Aww.
So she's slowly trying to like tell her patients, yeah, my daughter's becoming a dentist. She can see her after this so that she can slowly like cut down her workload and retire. Yeah.
It's good to know how loyal their clients are to meet your mom.
Because I think a big part of dentistry is actually like the soft skills. And I think my mom is really good at that. And so she really like, a lot of her patients initially come in like quite scared and like, of course, with like previous experience from dentists that may not have been like positive.
Mm.
Yeah, they come in quite scared or like sometimes they're a bit more sensitive. And so I think when like my mom would really take that into consideration, really like make sure they're comfortable. And because of that, they really like built that trust with my mom. Yeah.
And is that something you learn at dental school as well? The soft skills when you meet with clients?
Yeah. I think every patient comes in like different, like the patients are all different, and so with the exposure to different people you sort of learn along the way like how to deal with the different, you know, challenges and stuff like that. Yeah, but I think picking up on these things along the way is quite important. Like in lectures and stuff they tell you about it, but you only actually learn when you start treating patients. Yeah.
And on top of university, you've also been involved in lots of the university clubs and also leadership roles. Do you want to tell us about being a international student ambassador?
Yeah, so it actually sort of started because of my
Dunedin Diaries.
Yeah, so because I was sort of posting vlogs. I sort of just enjoy posting vlogs. So they sort of saw some of my videos, especially at the start when I first came, and they kind of reposted some of it on the story. And so they reached out to ask if I wanted to be like an international ambassador. So what that consists of is mostly they have this app called Unibuddy, and it's for international students that want to ask questions. Like they have a bunch of students who can reply to their questions depending on what they want to ask. Yeah, so it's mostly international students who are interested in Otago, sending me questions about Otago and dentistry and stuff like that. Yeah, but on top of that, sometimes they would have like photo shoots and stuff, and they would ask if I'll be interested in helping out with those. Yeah.
Oh, and what sorts of questions people would ask?
Some of it would be like what it's like in Otago. Some would be what dental school is like. Some maybe a bit more towards like if there's any like financial assistance here. But there are also like guidelines with that, and they said that certain things to refer it to like us Otago who are more well versed with these questions. Yeah.
Yeah, but you can always talk about your experience.
Yeah. And I think that was something that I was already doing on Dunedin Diaries, because I think from when I started, there'll be people like messaging me to ask about stuff because they see that I'm experiencing it here. So it's kind of just like bringing that to a proper platform that's regulated by the university. Yeah.
And so how long have you been the International Student Ambassador?
I think this would be my second year as an international ambassador. Yeah.
And what sorts of activities have you done with them?
So it's mostly the Unibuddy thing, but I also have done a photo shoot with them, their spring photo shoot. So that was interesting. That was my first time in a photo shoot and I was really nervous going in, but it actually turned out being really good.
Aww.
And everyone's really friendly. Yeah. And they also have like events every few months. Yeah.
And I'm sure you make a lot of friends from there too.
Yeah.
You've also been involved in MUSA, the Muslim University Students Association, mm-hmm. and also OMSA. Do you want to tell us about them?
Yeah, so I think my involvement was more maybe in my earlier years of university. I joined MUSA midway through 2023, and I was in MUSA for about a year and a half. I was like a general committee member, so I was mostly helping out with events and sometimes like helping out with the planning and stuff like that. Yeah, and OMSA, I was in OMSA in 2024 and I was the media officer, so that was a little bit different. That was more towards like the social media aspect of it and like taking photos and videos of events.
And you already do that on Dunedin.
Yeah, it's just doing it for someone else now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so thinking about MUSA, how has it been for you as a student?
My experience in MUSA. Well, it's been really great. And I think through MUSA, I actually made a lot of friends as well. And even during events, we sort of get to meet people and stuff like that. And I think when I first came, it was really like MUSA and the events that they organized that sort of helped me find a community here.
And thinking about, you know, being Muslim here in Dunedin, did you find that there were any sorts of challenges or do you think that you felt supported with the community here?
I think it was actually pretty good. To some degree, I feel like here people are more open to Muslims in a sense. Like in Singapore, because it's more secular, it's sort of like a toned down thing. But here people are more like open and accept, like and accommodating of it. And I feel like the ones who are not are more out of like ignorance and they've never like met Muslims before. So when I came here, like some of my classmates, like they've actually never spoken to a Muslim before. And I was like the first Muslim person that they spoke to. And so it was like quite an interesting experience. Yeah, but besides that, I feel like the facilities that they have here for Muslims are actually really good. Like they have the prayer room in the central library, which I was quite shocked by, because like you even like need an access card to go in and stuff like that. So they actually set up like a proper room with like the prayer mats and like an environment that's like for Muslims to feel like comfortable practicing their faith. Yeah, I think my one challenge, especially at the start, was maybe the food, because over here, I mean, in Singapore, I was used to like restaurants being like fully halal certified. But I think over here, it was a bit of a struggle, like navigating that and figuring out what was like halal versus what was like, some restaurants would say that they offer like halal meat, but then I wasn't as sure on like their, you know, behind the scenes stuff. Yeah.
And how has it been spending Ramadan in Dunedin? Because you've spent a few Ramadans here.
It's actually been really great. I think the first Ramadan that I spent here felt very transformative for me. Because I think that was really where I got to meet a lot of people. And because the mosque has iftar every night for the students. And so, like, especially at that time when it wasn't as late, I would come every day and every day I would meet like different people. And because you keep seeing people every day, you sort of slowly become friends with them. And in first year when I was still like trying to find my community and my friends, that was really like the time where I got close to a lot of the friends that I'm still friends with today. Mm. Yeah.
And that's when you really needed to find your people as well. You've also done some Ramadan diaries, and I saw that you were cooking at the masjid as well for one of the days.
So the iftars at the mosque, it goes on like a volunteer sort of system. So every day people would volunteer to cook iftar. And there are some days where I do it with my friends. And so it's sort of just like getting the ingredients, prepping, and the mosque also provides the funds for it and the meat for it. So in terms of like the finance part of it, we don't really have to worry about it. It's more of just doing the cooking. And I think, especially if I do it with like my Malaysian friends, it's a good way to like get people to get a a taste of Malaysian food. Yeah.
And what did you cook with your friends?
I think the most recent one was we made ayam goreng berempah, sayur masak lemak, and my friend made a really spicy sambal belacan. Yeah, and I think the people really enjoyed it. Oh, yeah,
and it's good to share Malaysian cuisine as well with the community. Yeah.
Mm. And I think even in the past few years as well, sometimes it would be like doing it with the clubs and associations. Like when I was in OMSA, there was one day that OMSA did the cooking together, and like the Musa girls did the cooking together. Yeah, so it's also like a bonding time with friends, which is really nice.
This year, we had Chinese New Year at the same time as Ramadan.
Mm-hmm.
Can you tell us what your experience been, you know, celebrating Chinese New Year and also Ramadan?
Yeah, for sure.
As a Chinese Muslim?
So this would be my first Chinese New Year, like, away from home. Yeah, because normally Chinese New Year fall, like, right before school starts. But then this year, it just sort of the way that it worked was that I had to be here for Chinese New Year. But alhamdulillah, it was, like, the day before Ramadan started, so I still got to like enjoy. I did like a hot pot with my friends, and then the next day, like, Ramadan started. Yeah, but normally for Chinese New Year, we would go back to my grandparents' place in Seremban, and I think for me, to some degree, Chinese New Year felt a bit bigger than Hari Raya, just because it'll be this trip, like, away from home, and normally it'll be like a reunion dinner, reunion lunch, and then we also like play fireworks and like play basketball and stuff like that. Yeah, and I think as a kid, I remember we would go visit into a few houses, and I would remember the houses by the swings that they had.
Oh,
and we'd be like, oh, is it the white swing, the green swing? And then as a kid, we would just like rush to the swings. I mean, of course, as we grew up, we stopped doing that.
So as like there's lots of houses with lots of different swings.
Yeah, I think it was also something that we didn't have in Singapore, because Singapore, the houses are more like HDB buildings, so it's like high-rise buildings, whereas in Malaysia, most of my relatives stayed in like terrace houses and stuff like that, so they had space to have swings in their houses. Yeah.
Oh.
And it was just a nice time to see like all the relatives that I don't get to see often, not just because I'm in Singapore and they're in Malaysia, but also because they live in other parts of Malaysia as well, and so we all come down to Seremban for Chinese New Year, which is really nice.
And how did you bring Chinese New Year to Dunedin, since it was your first time celebrating it?
So I wanted to still have the vibes, and so I was like, I need to do something. And I actually had like clinic in the morning, I think. But then after that, I was like, okay, I'll bake some Chinese New Year cookies. And then I did a hot pot with my friends. Yeah, so just a little bit of still like gathering and socializing. Yeah.
Yeah. And what about Hari Raya here? Do you... how do you celebrate when you're here?
Yeah, so Hari Raya, I have had to be here for the past few years. And I think every year has been a bit different, because some days I have school and stuff. But on the days that I don't have school, it's more like visiting, because quite a lot of the families that are in, like the Malaysian families, especially in Dunedin, they would have like open houses. And so my friends would like invite me to come with them to the open houses. Yeah, so it's been really good.
Mm. Do you feel homesick when you're here during Eid?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, it's quite different from back home, but I think especially on the days of Eid that I get to be with people, like at least there's still that sense of community and celebration and stuff like that. So because of that, the homesickness doesn't come up as much. Yeah.
Mm.
And my first Raya here, my parents and my brother actually came like, I think 1 or 2 days after Eid to celebrate with me, because they didn't want me to feel like all alone.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that was really nice.
That's good, because I feel like during your first year, you kind of need that family support.
Yeah. And even that first year as well, like one of my friends whose family lives here, they sort of just adopted me. Yeah. And they're like, you know what? You're my daughter for today as well. And so I sort of helped them with the prep and everything as they had like people over. Yeah.
And that helps, because you also create memories.
For sure. Yeah.
Over the summer, I saw that you traveled to Japan and China.
Yeah.
I wonder if you can tell us about, you know, the countries that you visit and your experience there as a Muslim.
Yeah, so I went to Japan and China. I mean, the experiences are quite different. I think for Japan, it was more like just like to travel and you know, get the experience of Japan. I went to a few places, but I think for China, it was quite eye-opening for me. So it was my first time in China. We went to Yunnan, and we sort of got a tour agency to arrange the itinerary because we've never been there, so we didn't know what to look out for. And so it was an itinerary that was more like a that accommodates more to like Muslims and stuff like that. So it was quite a packed itinerary. But the places that we went to, like for the first, I think the first day that we were there, we knew that there was a masjid in the area, and we were going in circles and we couldn't find it. And so we saw there was this hijabi lady selling fruits on like the sidewalk. And so we sort of just asked her for directions. And it was quite a small masjid, actually. The only other lady there was, I think, the imam's wife. And so, like, outside, after praying and everything, we were sort of, like, my dad and my brothers, particularly, were socializing with, like, the guys there. And so they, like, made salam, they left. And then after that, we were like, you know, we'll go and get fruits from that lady that gave us directions. And so they bumped into the same guy from the masjid there, and I'll just call this guy the brown jacket guy.
So
they started talking again, and then we were like, okay, we'll get some fruits. So we were like picking what fruits we wanted, and then the brown jacket guy was sort of like communicating between us and like the fruit
that lady. Translating, yeah.
And so at first we thought that it was because he thought there might be like a communication barrier, and so he was just helping us. And then, so when we were ready to pay, we were sort of like asking how much it was. And so he was sort of like translating it for us. And then the lady replied. And then the next thing you knew, he paid for all of our foods for us. And we were like, wait, what? And he was like, no, we want you to feel like welcome here. Like, you know, we're all Muslims. Yeah. And we were like, I think that was like the first time we experienced something like that. And we were so touched by it. And it wasn't like a one-time thing. Like after that, we went to, I think, Sha Tien. And even in the mosque, like people saw that we weren't locals and they would come up to us and like try to start a conversation just to make us feel welcome. Aww. And then there was one day we also went to see this, I think it's a madrasa. And so we went in, there were like a bunch of people like talking and like socializing sort of. And I think after a while we realized they were like the teachers in the madrasa. And so we briefly, like, spoke with one of the ladies, and then, like, they sort of left. And outside that madrasa, there was actually, like, a sort of like a street market, had a lot of, like, vegetables and stuff like that. And so we bumped into that lady again. And so she, like, when we spoke to her again, she invited us to her house for lunch. And the thing is, wow, we had a train to catch, like, later that day. And so we were sort of, like, in a time crunch, and we had to, like, sort of reject her offer. I mean, we would have gone if we weren't so tight on time, but we had to reject her offer. And she kept saying, no, it's okay, you can come, like, don't feel shy, like, we want to make you feel welcome. And then, like, we told her that we were sort of tight on time, and she was like, okay, you can exchange like a WeChat contact so that if you ever come here again, like, let me know, and we can organize something.
Wow.
And it was my first time like experiencing that, and the fact that it wasn't just a one-time thing, but it happened like on several occasions, like,
Yeah. It's quite heartwarming to hear this.
And it's like the first time that you sort of feel like, oh, like really love for the sake of Allah.
Yeah. What else did you learn from Chinese Muslims?
I think something really interesting to me was the way that they conduct their Quran classes. Of course, because they speak Chinese. So they would like speak in Chinese, but then when they read the Quran, it's still like in Arabic. Yeah. And I think even in the mosque, they would sit. Or one thing that my dad especially, he noticed, was that when they go into the mosque, like, they really put away all their things and they just sit there. And so normally, you know, when we go to the masjid, sometimes we have our phone like next to us and our coat in front of us and stuff like that. But over there, they really, like, their coats and their phones are like on one side. And when they're like on like the prayer mats and stuff, even if they're not praying, they're just sitting there like doing zikir and stuff like that. Yeah, so it's really like phones on the side. You don't look at it until you leave the mosque. Yeah.
They're really focused.
Yeah. And even on the women's side, like there was one corner where the Quran classes was happening, and then there's another corner where there were a bunch of ladies like reciting Yasin and stuff like that. And it just felt like a very wholesome like community, you know, and like the, like seeing the way that it's run even in China. Yeah.
What I love about Chinese because I've been to China and I've been to a mosque there. The architecture is really beautiful because they combine obviously the Chinese architecture and also Islamic culture as well.
Like I went to a few of the mosques and they're all like beautiful.
Gorgeous.
Yeah. The architecture, I mean, it's sort of different in each mosque, but still like the attention to detail and everything is so nice.
Because it's different to like the Malaysian mosque that I've been to because it's just, you know, Malaysian culture.
Yeah,
I just love when they mix their local traditions as well.
Like their local elements with like the Islamic elements, yeah.
I wonder if you have any advice to the young Muslims out there listening who are studying in Dunedin. Because, you know, this is your final year and I wonder if there has been things that you sort of had to learn while you were here.
I think for me, finding my like Muslim community here and like my Muslim group of friends, it felt quite transformative. I think because in Singapore, like, of course I had like my Malay Muslim friends, but the friendship wasn't really centered. Like it was more centered around being friends rather than like of like emphasis on like the Islamic aspect of it. But then over here, making friends that like seeing the way they practice the religion sort of influenced me to want to be better as well. And I think just finding your community here, like a Muslim community here, will also like help you keep going in a sense.
Thank you so much, Sophia, for being here today. And I just learned so much about your life journey and also why you're really passionate about the work you do. I wish you all the best for your studies.
Thank you so much.
I'm sure we'll be in touch.
Inshallah.
Thank you, Sister Sophia. Now we listen to an Islamic song by Rashiduddin entitled Alhamdulillah, Thanks God for Everything.
Open up my eyes to see the light. The sun begins to fade away the night. For every single breath I take in here, you wash away my worry and my fear. I look upon the sky so vast and blue and realize that it all belongs to you. For waking up to see another day, there is only one word I need to say. Alhamdulillah for all that you do. Alhamdulillah, my praise is for you. Alhamdulillah, through joy and through pain. Alhamdulillah, again and again. For every drop of water in the sea, Alhamdulillah for blessing me. Sometimes I cry and feel I am alone, with heavy burdens weighing like a stone. But then I look at all you gave to me, my beating heart, my eyes that clearly see. You catch the tears that fall upon my face. You cover me with mercy and with grace. So even when my heart begins to break, I thank you for the plans that you will make. Alhamdulillah for all that you do. Alhamdulillah, my praise is for you. Alhamdulillah, through joy and through pain. Alhamdulillah, again and again. For every drop of water in the sea, Alhamdulillah, for blessing me. For family, for health and for my home,
for never leaving me to walk alone. Forgive me when I fail to comprehend that you are my creator and my friend. I place my forehead down upon the floor and beg you, Allah, open up the door. Alhamdulillah for all that you do. Alhamdulillah, my praise is for you. Alhamdulillah, through joy and through pain. Alhamdulillah, again and again, for every drop of water in the sea. Alhamdulillah for blessing me, for everything I am. Alhamdulillah.
That is the end of our program today. Thank you for your time. Special thank you to ORFM for facilitating the production of this program. I should add that the views expressed in this podcast do not necessarily represent the views of Otago Muslim Chaplaincy as such. If you have any questions, please email muslimchaplaincy@otago.ac.nz. We hope to see you next time, inshallah, God willing. Assalamu alaikum.
You've been listening to Muslim Chaplaincy Conversation at OARFM Dunedin.
This podcast was produced by ORFM Dunedin with support from New Zealand On Air.